Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Test, 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 1, 2, 1, 2. Test, test, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9er.
1, 0.
1, 0?
Yeah.
Excuse me for a second, I got it. There we go.
Oh, that's what iPhones are for, you can't tell.
Oh, that's right, iPhones.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs. So, welcome, Mark.
Yeah, Steve is still supposed to come back, I think.
No, he's not going to.
No, they're still no, claiming he's going to.
Unless he really gets better, he's not going to.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm sure that, I'm sure he wants to. I mean, I think that that's, you know, something that he probably loves the stress, and he must be some kind of a, I don't know if he's a control freak, but for him to step down, it had to be serious enough for him to step down to the point where I think that unless his doctors assure him that he's much better and he feels much better, I don't think he's coming back.
Yeah. Or he can come back, just give high level orders only or something.
I know. Find out what Gil's up to.
Gil?
Bring Gil back.
He was no good.
What?
He was terrible, wasn't he?
No. Well, I don't know if he was terrible, but he...
So as you were saying, this is Slurpcast. I'm the world-famous Mark Bernay. You're Wes.
I'm not the world-famous Mark Bernay. I'm Wes.
And if you go to www.slurpcast.com, you'll see blog entries that give all the details of everything we talk about with URLs and stuff like that. And we call it Slurpcast because we eat in restaurants and slurp our food and crunch our tortilla chips.
Sometimes, depending on where we're eating.
Yeah.
Yep.
While we're talking, while we're doing the recording.
We focus around tech with a bent towards old technology. We kind of, Mark and I both enjoy talking about old toys. We both have a history of being involved in computers and technology.
Right.
Of course, Mark goes back further than I do, but I'm actually surprisingly
knowledgeable about old technology, more so than you might think.
Right.
So yeah, I remember the days of the bulletin board and the 1200 baud Atari 400 modem.
1200 baud. 1200 baud's pretty fast.
You go back further back.
110 baud for me.
Wow.
Yeah. Absolutely, what?
I'm pretty sure
what.
I know what. I'm pretty sure I am. Yeah. I'm going to cut 2 years off my life expectancy and go with the bacon cheeseburger.
Hmm?
No?
No, maybe.
You've been more adventurous than that.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. Come on.
All right, let's see. No.
Quesadillas are delicious.
Are they really good?
Yes.
Okay, I'll do the quesadillas. You convinced me. I'll do the chicken.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. See there?
Okay, you got me.
Yes, sir.
I'll get the roast turkey special.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, so I haven't checked in yet, and I haven't turned my cellular off yet.
So that was
there might be GSM noise and all this stuff so far.
That was Noel, who convinced me not to have a burger.
Right. So let me check in with Brightside. Turn the cellular off. But you think there is Wi-Fi here?
Yeah, I think there is some Wi-Fi.
Okay. So I'll switch over to that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm holding my phone far away from the microphone.
Yeah, no one... Okay, there's... Oh, what did I get? I got the Safeway across the street. They're offering, by the way, free Wi-Fi.
One in Market Street has... Because they serve food. They may have tables. Because the one near me... Well, one of the two near me has tables where you can sit down and eat their prepared food and stuff.
Okay.
And they have free Wi-Fi, I think, for those people.
You have to log in. And you have to log in and read their instructions or something. They have, like, some kind of a landing page. But I think most of the...
Were you able to reach it okay?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, just log in for Brightkite, and I can turn it on. I don't really care. But the other place is what?
It'll say Safeway.
No, the name of where we are right now.
Oh, the name of the place right here is the Ranch House.
Yeah. It's not showing up.
That's the name, sure. Ranch House Cafe. Located in wonderful, beautiful, savant, svelte, and
it's not showing up.
Highly celebrated town of Moraga.
No, it's not.
That's not Moraga, Bolivia, or Moraga, Mexico. That is Moraga, California.
Right. Which is near Arinda, California, isn't it?
That is near Arinda, California. I'm connected.
Okay. Well, I'll just turn mine off once I get... Anyway. So, do you have any items? Anything happened this week?
I'm going to start out with some computer history information. I always compile a list of interesting articles from the Computer History Daily Quote, which is, believe it or not, a calendar that's published yearly of daily historical.
But they come out with different ones each year. Do they come up with different ones each year or the same?
I think they come out with different ones each year, but I've subscribed to their RSS feed, which I think publishes what they have per day in an RSS feed. The first version of the interpersonal chat program ICQ was introduced by Israel-based Mirabilis in November of 1996. The instant messaging application is enthusiastically received by hundreds of thousands of users. ICQ achieves one of the largest download rates for a startup company in the history of the Internet. True to this day. America Online acquired Mirabilis in June of 1998. So it is now an America Online application, although they also use the same protocol as Yahoo, right? So it's Yahoo and AIM?
No, AIM and ICQ are identical. But Yahoo, they share, but I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't know if it's internally the same protocol or they're somehow sharing.
I think ICQ is still separate, though.
MSN can share with Yahoo.
Okay.
No, but ICQ and EAM, especially now that they're the same company, they really are the identical protocol as far as I know, except that just the user ID names are different and stuff.
Okay.
Whereas MSN and Yahoo, I think they're very different protocols, but somehow they talk to each other. Their clients will, or maybe they combine their protocols. I'm not sure.
Well, I see the applications between Yahoo and AIM are almost identical. They look almost the same and have the same features. So,
but how do they make any money?
How do they make any money? I have no idea. Well, I mean,
ICQ used to just give it away for free.
Yeah,
and they had servers and stuff. So, how do they make money?
It's AOL.
Now.
I mean, it comes from other things. It doesn't come from...
No. Now.
Yeah. I think it was all venture capital, wasn't it?
But with the Mirabilis, how was Mirabilis ever hoping to make money?
I got to believe it was just all venture capital funding. And
yeah.
Do you recall any advertisements in the application?
Oh, AAM does.
Well, I know AAM.
Yeah. Did ICQ have advertising? Not originally, I don't think.
Also, one of the most...
I have a 7-digit user ID.
ICQ is one of the most widely ported applications as well. I remember it being available for many different systems.
Right. Yeah, it works with Beehive and all the modern stuff.
Yeah. So Digsby all supports it.
Right. But it's the only one that you really get a lot of spam on because it's just your user IDs are just a number.
Right.
People just try every number and send you spam. You know, they tend to get more than the average instant messenger.
That's true. The 520 Tesla S sedans are reserved in 1 week.
Yeah, but they'll never actually come out with
520 Tesla S sedans are reserved in 1 week.
I'm skeptical they'll ever actually ship.
The company gets $2.6 million in fees. And I think we talked about this last week. They're waiting for
batteries that can actually work.
Well, besides that, they're waiting for some kind of large government funding subsidy to
if the technology were viable and suitable for actually producing nowadays, they would just be able to do it and make money. They wouldn't need subsidies. They need subsidies, it's not really.
I know, yeah. I do have pictures of what that vehicle looks like.
Right.
Anybody can Google them.
I've seen pictures, yeah, but I'm skeptical about the whole company if they're ever going to come out with anything, because they're always having problems and they're always having battery development issues and stuff. And I don't know.
Huh.
I tend to be very skeptical of their specifications for the race cars, especially the battery life. And they just never actually seem to come out. You claim they actually did come out with something people were buying. But
$200,000 sports car, all electric. It's kind of a high price. They're claiming that they've gotten things down to a point where they can actually unload the sedans for $49,900.
Right. Yeah.
That's not even going to be available until 2010, even though people are jumping on the waiting list for these sedans.
And it's totally ridiculous because for way less money than that, they can get a regular car or hybrid or whatever that would be much cheaper to operate, so there's no excuse for this.
Well, for if you buy one for that price, you're gonna get a just like you do at Fry's, you get that mail-in rebate, and this time it's gonna be $7,500.
Okay. So your total price would be $43,000, or total price would still be $50,000?
So you have to have $40,000 to reserve it.
Okay.
So you got to plunk down $40,000, I guess.
And have that locked up for a couple of years if they ever come out with it at all. The bankruptcy court will probably distribute the $40,000 to their creditors and not give it back to you.
I see.
But I think it's very dangerous to deal with them at this point like that.
I would hope that as somebody who would reserve the car, I get to sign some kind of a legal agreement that says if you do go out of business, I get my money back.
You can't necessarily do that. The bankruptcy court is in control of the money. You won't necessarily do it that way.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Well, besides that, when asked, I should know the founder, but when asked about competition, he claims his company, Tesla, is the first to make electric vehicles viable.
And, but they're not. But they haven't made them viable.
And they have not made them viable. And that they are leaders in this area and will be so in 2010, because one of the somebody that interviewed him said there's other car companies that have more more power, more financial
they've actually been making cars for 100 years or so,
right.
Where they've never made anything.
And some company like Mitsubishi or some company, some strange company, is claiming to have a very viable electric vehicle by the end of 2009, something you're going to be able to purchase. And he said, no, we were the first, and we're going to be the first in 2010. So,
but they're not the first because they haven't done anything yet.
Well, they have. They did the $200,000 vehicle.
And they sold like one of them or something. If you know that.
No, I think I saw Jason Calacanis's.
Yeah. First of all, there were...
Who claims to drive it every once in a while?
Yeah. No, there were electric cars before.
I don't know him. Yes, I know there were. Yeah, talk about that.
Yeah. No, electric cars have been made. I have pictures of ones I've seen made around 1914.
Wow.
And I've heard that they've made them long before that. And the problem has always been battery life.
Yeah.
Battery technology and battery life. And I think it still is. I don't think Tesla is really... doesn't really have anything different than anybody else.
Right.
Yeah, because I know someone who knows the history of all mechanical stuff, very good mechanical stuff, and he claims that electric cars have always been promised to be 2 years away.
Mm-hmm.
And they still are. That's what Tesla's promising now. There's absolutely nothing new about the promise. People throughout the last 100 years talked about electric cars 2 years away.
I'm sure there are people fidgeting listening to this show right now because, Toyota... and Ford came out. Well, Ford came out with that. What, the EV1?
Yeah.
And that was around for a while, and then they
wouldn't sell them.
They landfilled that model because, some say that's political red tape. That it was actually a really good car, and the owners who were leasing these vehicles really did appreciate them and felt that they were pretty good machines.
Yeah. I think it's battery. I think the problem is in practice the batteries wouldn't last.
Yeah, we definitely. My view is that we definitely need to have a revolution here in battery battery power.
Mm-hmm.
And we're due for one, because I think there are alternatives that could be...
Yeah.
How many times have I used the word viable?
Right, so there's just something funny about the Tesla company. I've never trusted it. It just gives out specifications that I've always been skeptical about the specifications. And they're always having... problems with their factories. They always just have it. You know, they had all those transmission problems, and then their engineering, all their engineering people left. They had some big personnel problem for a long time, but they lost a lot of people and stuff. And it's just the whole company just seems weird to me. I just doubt they're ever going to ship anything. You know what I'm saying? And anyone who would want to pay $50,000 for an electric car is crazy anyway, because for a third of that price, you can buy a hybrid or something that will be just as cheap to run.
Because
electricity is not free.
It's not going to look the same way, though.
Why? Their sedan is...
These are beautiful cars.
Their sedan is?
Yes, the sedan is beautiful. It's a drop-top sunroof, like a Miata.
Right.
But, no, it's really nice. It's really nice.
Is it as small as a Miata? Because that would explain.
Thank you.
Because it's as small as a Miata.
It's not a huge car.
That explains everything.
Really?
Yeah, because it's really tiny. Of course, you can make an electric car.
Yeah,
really
batteries
tiny.
Have to be kind of smaller. Hidden. That's pretty. We'll see. I mean, we'll see what the final car looks like. But I mean, there are pictures, and I'll put post.
I'm predicting there won't be one.
Okay.
But anyway, and then No, but I'm just saying it's not worth the money because, again, if you actually have to pay for electricity yourself at full prices, it'd be a lot more expensive to run than a gas car, I think.
I don't think so, because electric engines are much more, there's no oil, they last a lot longer than car engines do. It's not real. There's not, if they're done well, and electric engines have been around for such a long time that there's many companies have perfected it. So it could, you could have a car with an electric engine that like probably lasts or outlasts a lot of the oil based car engines, I think.
Yeah. You know, no, but I'm just saying the electricity, if you actually had to pay for it, certainly where I live in San Francisco, the electricity would cost me way more.
Okay.
I mean, I realize there's going to be subsidies. That's my point why it's not ready yet. If you have to have special subsidies to get the electricity cheaper for them and stuff like that, then the world's not ready for it yet.
Huh.
And I think that's really true.
But it's going to take a lot more electricity to power these things than I'm thinking about then.
Not more electricity, but the price of it. The price of the electricity or power, at least in San Francisco, the price I'm paying for electricity will be way more than the price of gas to go the same distance, I think. Yeah.
So why do you think that? You think that's true?
Yeah.
So you got any stories?
Yeah.
Do you?
I sent a Twitter today to Craig, and he answered, and he
Craig
liked
Newmark.
It. And he liked it.
Let's make it real clear. What
Craig,
we're talking
Craigslist.
About Craigslist.
Yeah.
The creator.
And he answered me, and he said he liked it.
Really?
And you think that...
Anybody who's ever followed Craig Newmark.
Yeah, you think all he knows how to talk about is birds and stuff. But I sent him a Twitter, and he answered.
About birds?
Well, not exactly. It was about this bird feeder.
There you go.
Their bird house. Has a photocell on the roof. And then there's, you know where bird houses will have a little perch sticking out or something?
Yeah.
The perch on this one is transparent and lights up all night long with LEDs from the power it's stored up in the daytime.
Okay.
The point being that moths at night will be attracted to the light, then the birds can just stick their head out of the birdhouse to eat the moths, get free food.
Free food.
Yeah, so Craig said he liked that idea. Like he might actually buy one. Because I sent it to him.
Did you tell him where to get it?
The article I showed him.
It's a JNR. Go to JNR. It's in New York. Are you in New York right now?
No. No, you can't go to New York. New York only has pigeons. So...
Oh. But hasn't... But if you buy things online from New York, you don't have to pay tax.
No, so apparently it's a British company because it seems to be priced in pounds and stuff.
Oh, okay. Congratulations. That's really interesting. That's actually something I might find interesting if you had Twittered it.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, let's see. I want to keep ringing with me week after week, but I never used it. Just let me mention it already. There's a website called tinieye.com.
T-I-N-I?
T-I-N-E-Y-E.
Okay.
What it is, you pointed out a picture, and if that picture is in its index, it's kind of like a web search engine, but based on pictures. And it'll kind of analyze and make a fingerprint of the picture you submit to it, and it'll tell you if it has that same picture anywhere else. It tells you where they're like if you see some website using a picture and it really came from somewhere else, it'll help you find where else it came from.
Really? That's cool. Yeah. So it just might, where do the spiders the web all day long? And
yeah, and just make signatures of pictures and it helps you find them. Yeah.
That's got to be a huge, massive system, though.
Yeah. They're kind of new.
Unless they're archiving, like, just the characteristics of an image.
Right. It has a pretty big explanation about how it works on their website.
Okay.
But, it doesn't have a lot of pictures, but if it does, it will find it.
Huh.
I found one. There's this website that claims that they never, ever, 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 ever use any commercial imagery. They only use pictures they took themselves.
All right.
And one of their pictures, I found the source where one of the pictures came from, and it was a commercial imagery. So it's kind of fun.
So it doesn't have to be images that you own. It could be anything.
Oh, yeah. Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. You just give it any picture, and it'll tell you if it knows of that picture being anywhere else.
Huh.
anywhere else, you may find out it is copyrighted or is an archive of photos or it was for sale or something.
Yeah. Okay.
It was kind of interesting.
So you want to talk a little bit about, I know you can argue with me here, but it, right. it sounds like people have figured out how to jailbreak the version 3 of the firmware beta 2
right.
of the iPhone. But so right now Apple's released a version to developers to start using for developing using specifically the new APIs in the beta. And so people have dissected that version of the firmware,
mm-hmm.
and now we're at beta 2, but according to this article that I have, only a few days, what is it, quick PWN, after the beta came out, they figured out a way to do it.
They had broken the first one. The original beta was broken.
And their claim to fame is that when the beta came out, like a few days after, they figured out how to break it.
Right.
And then when this new one came out, beta 2, which is pretty cool, mm-hmm. they also, within a few days, broke that as well. So
will they claim that for these particular original devices and that have with the boot ROM being in hardware and Apple can't change the boot ROM and stuff,
uh-huh.
they claim there's absolutely nothing Apple can do
to stop them
from jailbreaking these older models.
Okay.
But the new iPhone that may come out this summer might conceivably be able to have that one secure enough that they can't do it.
Now in the firmware there's references to other models of both Touch and iPhone.
Yeah, so it's partly that and partly the jailbreak people, I guess you have inside information or something, I don't really know, but they're quite convinced that there will be new models this summer.
Yeah, or even sooner. I'm wondering if they're not going to introduce something when the firmware comes out.
But that's the summer, kind of.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's in about a month.
Well, they probably will come out together, I suspect. But they're warning people right now not to jailbreak, you know, that they're jailbreaking 3.0 for development purposes and for understanding all the new features.
Mm-hmm.
But they're definitely recommending that the average person not try to jailbreak and go to it. Partly because they said that there's expiration dates in each version. So you may be using your jailbreak 3.0 and you're out somewhere, and then suddenly Apple invalidates that version, makes you upgrade, but you may be out in the field somewhere.
Right.
And can't do that.
Isn't that like a Microsoft practice, though? I mean, when they come out
for betas
and stuff, doesn't Microsoft like time out?
Yeah.
I don't know Apple ever doing that.
Well, I think they're claiming that this is doing that.
So is this the first case where Apple's stealing ideas from Microsoft?
No. Everything Apple does is like Windows, like Apple has its operating system with little Windows in it and stuff. Didn't they get that from Microsoft?
Oh. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, see? And how about, okay, like Macs have this horizontal thing with a bunch of buttons on them with names and letters and names and numbers and stuff, and you kind of, you know, use your fingers and you hit the buttons and stuff to like type or something.
Oh, they
got that from Microsoft, didn't they? Didn't they get that from Microsoft?
Oh, I thought you were talking about the humpy thing.
No,
that's called the dock.
Yeah, no, I meant the.
And they got that.
What? In front of the screen, there's something that you put your fingers on that has a whole bunch of buttons and stuff.
Okay. Yeah, it's not paper.
Did they get that from Microsoft? I think it was what? The keyboard or something, yeah.
Yes, they did. They got that from Microsoft.
See?
Sure.
So, yeah.
And the arrow keys that they have on some keyboard?
That's true, yeah.
They got that from Microsoft.
They certainly got that from Microsoft, yeah. Absolutely, they got that from Microsoft, yeah. So anyway. And the other reason not to go to 3.0, that 3.0 really forces you to upgrade the modem firmware called the baseband to a version that they don't know, that the hacking people don't know how to break that version of it to use foreign SIM cards.
Hmm.
The version of the baseband that came with firmware 2.2 is the only one they know how to break right now. And so if you want to install any newer firmware and care about using foreign SIMs, you have to be very careful to jailbreak and get around the update to the
firmware.
And
yeah.
So for 2.2.1, they know exactly how to do that, and it's pretty easy. For 3.0, you can again do it. You can install 3.0 and bypass upgrading the baseband. With 3.0, Apple put in some sneaky tricks where if it sees the baseband as the old version, it won't talk to it. They can't actually make any calls or do anything.
Okay.
So anyway, those are reasons not to go to 3.0 right now for the average person.
Those are good reasons.
Yeah.
The fact that you'd basically be breaking... Well, not quite breaking.
Well, you won't be breaking it. You'll lose the ability to use
turn your phone into a touch.
Well, no, you can just go ahead and update the baseband, but then you'll lose the ability to ever use foreign SIMs and stuff.
Oh, I see. Oh, it's only that? Yeah,
that's all. That's all.
Okay. So what's this story about President Obama offering an iPod to the Queen of England?
Right.
So he... it's not... So basically, on April 1st, Obama met with the Queen of England and got her a... I guess it was an iPod.
I'm not sure if it was a touch or if it was
one of the older models, but he had on that touch, or on that iPod, he had some video of her last visit in 2007 to the United States.
Right.
That's a pretty forward-thinking president.
Well, but usually they give much more valuable gifts, not just some cheap iPod with some news
tech,
photos or something.
That's pretty much like a pretty futuristic, tech-savvy gift, you know?
Why didn't they give her a Zoom?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Why didn't he give her a BlackBerry?
That's true, because he uses BlackBerry himself.
I know. Which I now use, too.
Right.
And I suspect is why I paid so much for it.
Did you realize, never really thought about this before, but Obama, just like you, is not able to run fart apps. I never really thought of it that way.
What?
Obama can't run... Are there fart apps for...
What?
For BlackBerry?
Oh, no, I haven't actually looked.
I doubt there are.
Good question. I'm like, what? I can run fart apps.
Yeah. anyway, but the scandal about Obama was that several weeks ago, he entertained Tony Blair at the White House, and they exchanged gifts, and Tony Blair gave him a pen holder made of the same kind of wood as the official Oval Office desk, and it came from a slave chasing boat that England had and stuff like that.
So very
historically valuable object, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Obama gave him a bunch of DVD movies, the Made in America movies, that people think he just sent someone over to Walmart to buy a pack of movies.
Right.
But apparently they weren't quite that casual. Apparently they were... It was a special pack that people in Hollywood prepared or something.
For him.
For him, maybe. It's not clear if there's really anything that special or not. And then the other thing is everyone says that they're Region 1 DVDs that they can't even play over there anyway unless they have a hacked player and stuff.
Which they probably do. But
so that seems like the stranger one.
That's just really funny. It's just like, hey, you know, due to the economic hard times here in the United States, we don't have a lot of money to be able to spend on foreign gifts. So I just ran down to Walmart and grabbed a couple of DVDs. I hope you don't mind.
I know.
So. Oh, yeah, special producer-only versions.
Yeah, maybe. It was never really that clear.
That's funny. Pretty good.
Yeah. I've got a couple of Google things.
Okay. We love Google.
Yeah. And one of them, you have to understand what day this was recorded. Whenever it gets on the air, we're recording on April 2nd, right?
Yeah, we're recording on April 2nd.
Yeah.
And I apologize if it is coming up, if it does get up any later than this weekend.
But Google has this thing called App Engine that people can write applications for use with Google servers and stuff.
Okay.
And they've always had it in Python only.
Okay.
But people always bug them that we don't like Python, want to use some other language. So they finally did.
What?
Google finally gave in and they added a second language you could write App Engine in. Fortran 77.
What?
Remember what day this is?
Fortran 77.
Yeah. So that's kind of interesting.
What? First of all, Fortran is really, really old. Why did they choose that? There's got to be some kind of a reason for it. Other than...
Because a lot of people, it's a familiar-to-use environment. Lots of programmers out there know how to program in Fortran, you know. And today is April 2nd. And also, there's you know, instead of having a larger, if someone has a legacy system written in Fortran that they're still using, they'll be able to port it over to Google App Engine and stuff.
This is an April Fool's joke, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say.
But anyway.
Nice. This is April 2nd.
Yeah, okay. Perfect.
Okay.
If you want to give it a try, you download our SDK and deploy your application by mailing punch cards to that it has an address where it should mail your deck of cards.
I was going to say, you're killing me.
But then I have a more serious one that also came out on April 1st, but everyone believes this one's real.
All right.
Google has always had this thing about making their own servers, that they have probably more computers than anyone else in the world,
uh-huh,
and more servers, more data centers and stuff.
Okay.
And it's always well known that they make their own machines with kind of commercial PC-style motherboards and stuff.
Okay.
And their own proprietary software. Well, they finally let people see them, let people see the machines up close and describe how they work and everything.
Okay.
And they're basically PC motherboards that are a little bit unique, that the motherboard only wants 12 volts of power,
mm-hmm,
and it makes its own other voltages. But normally a PC power supply will supply several voltages to, and wires to it. But they just found it more power efficient to serve 12 volts only and have the motherboard drive any other power it needs. And then instead of having big uninterruptible power supplies like everybody else does,
yeah,
you know, huge battery backup units or huge, they have inertial ones now where instead of having batteries, I'm serious about this. Large data centers sometimes have huge gyroscopes, and the backup is maintained by the gyroscope continuing to spin rather than using batteries.
But,
no, that's been around for a while. I'm
sure. Really?
Yeah,
are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Gyroscopes?
Yeah. Some of the...
I've never heard of this.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that was the fault. There was a large data center in the Bay Area that had hours of outage because of power problems.
Right.
And it turned out it was something about the controllers for switching the gyroscopes in line had a problem, so the gyroscopes didn't work as backups and stuff. But I'm serious. But Google claims that instead of having any kind of giant central backup power system like that in the facility, they put a little 12-volt rechargeable battery at each machine.
Okay.
And since the motherboards work on 12 volts only,
okay,
they just have that little battery floating across the 12 volts that comes into the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So it just switches over to that local internal battery, and they claim that that's much more efficient than having huge data center backup devices and stuff.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And the other thing that Google does is they have these modular data centers where what a shipping crate looks like that goes on ships. So sometimes
yeah,
I see it on
they now do like plastic shipping crates as well.
Yeah, but you know that size, about how big those things are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Google for a while now has been making their data center by cramming shipping crates like that full of servers and just have some simple I.O. to the outside world.
Right.
And then they just pick up these devices by the crane and set them down on the floor somewhere so they have these modular servers. If you want to add more servers to the data center, they just bring in another one of these created units.
Just stack them on top of each other if
yeah,
you want, probably.
Stuff like that, yeah. So,
that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, so we'll go to slurpcast.com. We'll post an article with
that's
pictures
awesome
and everything about how this all works.
All right, can I throw in another daily
sure
quote here?
Sure.
Something to talk about.
Oh, by the way, 1,160 servers per shipping crate.
Whoa.
Yeah. Because they just pack them in. Because they don't bother with cases. They just have motherboards.
The
they just kind of have motherboards and
right
disk drive stuff just kind of sitting there on shelves and stuff like that. Yeah.
The Apple Computer Company is born on April 1st, 1975. Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs designed the first Apple computer in Jobs' home. Jobs is able to convince a local electronic retailer to order 25 Apple I computers. In order to raise the money to make these machines, Jobs sells his Volkswagen microbus and Wozniak sells his HP Scientific calculator, enabling them to raise $1,300.
Okay.
And you were saying?
I was saying they were doing all this at the Homebrew Computer Club meeting that Jerry the Russian and I used to go to, these meetings.
Jerry.
And because Wozniak was a phone freak, and he knew I was a phone freak, the world famous Mark Burnet. We would talk at those meetings, and he knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest financial mistake I ever made was not saying to the two Steves, oh, you need $1,000? Can I just buy into your company a little bit or something? And
right, right.
Because I was in a position I could have done that if I had any idea what I was going
to do. So did you think that these guys were jokes?
Well, everybody in the club thought it was a joke that they're taking these homebrew machines and we were all building ourselves and stuff like that.
All right.
And he was giving away the schematics and helping people build these machines for the club and stuff.
Wozniak.
Yeah. And they wanted to take this, well, really the Apple II, they wanted to take this very same machine that he's teaching us how to build for free just for the price of the parts and put it in a plastic case and charge $800 for it. We all thought that was ridiculous. Who would possibly pay for that when they just build it themselves for nothing, you know, for $50 worth of parts? So I don't know, I wouldn't have wanted to invest in them. They were just too crazy. You know?
So was it their mindset at the time, even though it's like totally prevalent today,
right?
They must have been forward thinking enough to know that, like, you put the right software on this machine and it can appeal to the masses, it can appeal to everybody,
right?
Well, because back then it was always a hobbyist's thing, and that was considered to be kind of geeky and weird to the average
everyday user. Who else
would
want one? Anyway, yeah.
Right. So the fact that they were able to, like, say, well, if we put it in a plastic case, then we could sell it, and people would actually want to buy this.
And also,
it's pretty forward thinking.
They would sell it with the motherboard already having all the parts soldered in. Why would you pay $800 just for parts soldered in? You just solder them in yourself for free. Just
right.
Spend several
now,
hours.
What could you compare that to today? Like, is there some device or something?
Robotic stuff.
Okay.
We're at that stage today. People are doing homebrew robots and stuff.
Well, like, I have a friend who, you know him too, his name is Sammy.
Right.
Who puts together, like,
he's been a guest on our show.
I know he has. Mm-hmm. He puts together model airplanes that fly with servos and infrared controlling devices and stuff like that. Pretty fancy things. But he spends like hours and hours putting these things together. So the similar thing is like, well, his attitude might be, well, first of all, I enjoy putting them together, which obviously hobbyists did back then.
Right.
He says, why would I ever want to spend more money for this same kind of a plane when I get the enjoyment of putting it together myself?
Exactly,
So it's a similar thing, I guess.
Yeah. One day, speaking of that, one day when I was flying into Burbank Airport to visit Al Burnet, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, I'm looking out the plane window, and I see an airport I'd never really noticed before, somewhere approaching Burbank. There are other airports around there.
Okay.
But I noticed one I just never really had noticed before. I stare at it, and something seemed wrong with it. You see planes that are taking off and are landing and stuff, but it's kind of weird. So I just couldn't put my finger on what it was.
All right.
So when I land, I ask Al Burnet, who knows geography really well, what was going on with it, and he asked me which direction it was, exactly which direction the plane was coming in, how many minutes before landing did I see it, and stuff like that. Well, he says he's not familiar with any airports out in that direction, but he thinks he can understand what direction it came from. Let's just drive out there and look around.
Okay.
And I did develop a theory. At one point in thinking about this, I developed a theory that the reason it looks so bizarre is that it might have been a model airplane field.
Nice.
But it didn't look like that either. It's just kind of weird.
That makes sense.
So anyway, so we drive out there, and we finally do find a model airplane field, and we spend an hour out there watching them fly their planes and stuff.
It was
pretty advanced people. It was actually a big airport. It looked exactly like a regular airport with runways and taxiways and everything.
Okay, but
so
but
from
miniaturized?
The air, but miniaturized, yeah.
That's probably why it looked a little odd to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's cool.
That would be
awesome.
Yeah.
I've seen that with boats, like where people set up very fancy things, like in a lake somewhere, and there's like all these professional hobbyists come out with boats.
Right. But the thing is, for the model airplanes, though, if he's just building, you know, because that has been a kit, you can buy as a kit for 20 years maybe or something, it's not really the same thing. Because back then, when we're talking about homebrew computers, you had to build it yourself. There was not any way to buy a thing like that until like the Apple II and the Commodore PET. There wasn't any way to buy a thing like
that. Well, you could get machines that were assembled, but they were usually like cost per hit. They were like really expensive.
Yeah, you're talking like mini computer class or something. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's funny.
So,
you know, the trend that people are now getting into, where there's so many different social media network sites,
right,
and different types of chat services that are available,
sure,
that they're looking, people are kind of gravitating towards applications that wrap all of those services into one thing.
Okay.
And that's not new. That's been around for like a while. With a couple of them. What's the one that's paid? That there's a paid service, and you actually turned me on to this.
Ning? N-I-N-G?
No. There's one that's older than that. It's been around for a while. That's paid. I forget the name.
But a chat? Paid chat?
It's a chat client that actually wraps a lot of different AIM clients in.
Dixby's free.
Dixby's free, but there's another one that was for the PC that was pretty popular. It has plugins and stuff like that. Anyway, I forget the name of it, but there's a bunch of things out there. Dixby is cool because it not only wraps other IM clients into its own application, it also works with some of the social media networks, like
Twitter,
MySpace.
It's not my favorite for those, though.
No. Well, other people are doing the same sort of thing, and there's this application I want to speak about real quick called Nomi.
Okay.
And it's an Adobe Air application, but it is something that you download and install. And it claims to actually like have an RSS feed tool built in,
okay,
reader that it's for the Mac and the PC.
Okay.
And it looks like it's gaining popularity, but it wraps all those services, a lot of different social network sites, like some of the different ones that were not a part of, like Dixby, and some of the ones that you and I use,
right,
are YouTube. Well, LinkedIn we have. Dig is now new. I imagine Dixby's going to start working with Dig and some of the other sites. They're pretty good at coming out with updates. So I'll put a link up there on our show notes.
But I'm using one that's strictly Twitter called TweetDeck. That's good. It's a multi-columned interface, and each column can have filters and different things. So, for example, you can, you know, if someone follows you, that's supposed to be good courtesy to follow them back.
Okay.
But maybe you really don't care. You look at the Twitter homepage, you really don't care about them. Well, with TweetDeck, you can follow them anyway, and then just set a filter that you never see them again, or put them in a lower priority window. So first of all, it makes you think you're giving them the courtesy of following them. And second, if they send you a direct message, or if they send you a direct reply or a direct message, you will see it.
Okay.
So you can follow them in that sense, but you don't have to see their ordinary everyday stuff just by filtering it out.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that's TweetDeck, huh?
Yeah. And then there's another one that's a website. I forget the name right now, but there's a website that's not an Adobe Air application yet. It's just going with a web browser that does very similar things, but that one also does Facebook and a couple other things.
Huh. Speaking of social media sites, this relates to dating services. You know High Five? You ever heard of that?
No.
Well, apparently it's the third largest social network in the world. I have been a member of High Five since 2001.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Since 2003.
Okay.
Is that correct? Have they been around that long? Yeah, 2003, 2004. Whenever they first came out.
But very many people really use it?
It wasn't that big of a deal. It was just this silly free sort of...
Yeah.
Dating service, social service, not really necessarily specifically for dating, but
right.
I joined it. It was kind of cool. Somebody in New York had me join.
Okay.
Well, I didn't know that it's like reached like the top three, but they basically ended up laying off a whole ton of people recently.
But you weren't making anyway.
They were. I guess they had about 100 people employed. So.
What's the really big one?
Their site gets about 63 million monthly unique visits worldwide.
But they have no way to make money, might be the problem.
3.7 million of those are from the U.S.
Okay.
Yeah, it's free, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah, bad. Yeah.
So how do you lay off? How do you take a... With that kind of traffic, how do you take 100 people and lay off? Well, I guess you could lay off.
Well, if you run out of money, then you
so
that's
100 down to 50.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty serious. No, what's the one, the largest free dating service has the word fish in it? Or, you know, the phrase, there's so many fish in the sea or something. Okay. There's a free, there's a very popular free dating service that whose name is something, has the word fish in it somehow. I forget what it is, but we'll look it up. Look at Slurpcast, I'll look it up.
We actually are intelligent, we do memorize these things, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, but I read an article by about the guy who founded it and everything. It's kind of interesting.
I want to say like Razorfish, but that's not it.
No, no. Too many fish or something. I forgot.
Oh. Okay, my last article is for geekheads. You know about how .NET, C#, VB.NET, all those different languages, the whole, what's it called, the DLL or the .NET framework that exists for all these different platforms. Microsoft released this so that you could use any language of your own or of your choosing in their Visual Studio application, compile it to pseudocode, and that pseudocode would be run on that .NET library.
Right.
But you could code the .NET library. They claimed they were going to come out with a .NET library for many different platforms.
Well, for Fortran 77, I would hope.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, that's a language. That's not a platform.
Okay.
But anyway, so the idea was that you could code once, like Java, like supposedly. You could, have cross-platform code. You only write once, compile it, pseudocode, and it runs on all these different .NET libraries.
Okay.
Well, so one of the most popular and active but weird .NET incarnations is the one for Linux, which is better known as Mono. And that's a project that was totally open source. It's still open source. There's an IDE available for Linux that you can get to write Mono, write code for Mono, totally free.
Okay.
And they just released Mono 2.4.
Huh.
And there's an application. The IDE is called Mono Develop. And I've actually been playing around with Mono a little bit. It's a kind of a nice GUI. I forget what version of the .NET library Mono supports.
There's an ASP.NET.
What is it?
Because I was doing research.
ASP.NET?
Yeah. I was doing research for the last podcast. I ran into a page about ASP.NET.
Cool.
But anyway.
Yeah, they don't specify which version of the .NET library they support.
Oh, okay.
But it's not the full library.
But it just helps people write it in .NET.
Yeah, it lets you write .NET in an IDE that's comfortable in the Linux world, supporting all these Microsoft. Theoretically, you could compile pseudocode for the .NET for the Mono .NET library, and it would run on the PC.
Does anyone really do that very much? Or?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I know there's a lot of .NET applications that actually are quite complex.
Right.
In fact, the ID3 tag editor that I use for our show is written in .NET.
Oh, okay. So. I just installed one yesterday. Microsoft has these things called Power Toys. They're getting kind of obsolete because I don't think they really updated it since XP. But they do have one that still works called SyncToy, S-Y-N-C-T-O-Y.
Okay.
And that's apparently written in .NET because they've warned you to be sure you're up to date on your .NET before you...
Well, PowerShell, the scripting language that's now native or now a part of XP and probably Vista and...
Yeah.
That's written in .NET.
Okay. Anyway, so I updated my .NET yesterday for this SyncToy thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So,
do you have anything new?
Well, there's an article that points out that voicemail maybe is getting obsolete. You know, just how people are saying email is maybe getting obsolete, and people are using newer messaging services and stuff. This article claims that voicemail is getting obsolete, and a lot of people just don't bother checking their voicemail anymore.
Yeah.
They prefer that you send them a text message or email or something.
I agree. Since I got the BlackBerry, I hardly ever check my voicemail. People who know how to get a hold of me will either send me a text message or IM me directly.
Right.
So,
but you won't check a voice message if it comes in?
I do, but I find myself waiting around a lot more when I have time to check voicemail as opposed to somebody sends me a text. I just immediately get to it.
Really? Yeah, see, that's why I like the transcription services. And, you know, if you, when they open it up to the public, if you get a Google Voice services number, you'll get free transcription service for voicemail.
Yeah.
But I've been paying for it for a couple of years now. I've been paying like $10 a month. to have my voicemails transcribed.
Okay.
And because it's done by humans, it takes about 5 or 10 minutes to come in. But when I get a voicemail, rather than listening to it, I'll wait 5 or 10 minutes till the email comes in, you know, that has the transcript.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Western Digital goes solid state and acquires Silicon Systems.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Solid state for hard drives?
Yes.
Hard drive simulators?
Yep. Yeah.
I'm waiting until I get cheap, because I'll upgrade my notebook. Rather than buying a new netbook or anything, I'll upgrade my notebook with a solid-state hard drive one of these days.
Okay.
Should help it, I think.
So Silicon Systems is some kind of like really weird, obscure company.
Yeah, so who founded it? I forgot. I can't remember now.
Founded in 2003. And I guess they're into solid-state drives.
Okay.
Solid-state disks. But nobody really knows much about the company, and why would Western Digital get involved in there? So obviously they have some proprietary stuff that's valuable to Western Digital.
Okay.
And let's see here. Their products, Silicon products, the primary market was the government. So they were making but they mainly drives for systems in military and medical markets.
See, when's Google going to switch to solid state drives? That'll be interesting.
With
several hundred thousand machines or something.
That'll shrink the size of those machines even more.
Yeah, I know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So that's it for my articles.
Yeah. Well, okay, so we're ready for the fart apps now?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Bring them on.
First of all, you laugh. Everyone laughs at the fart apps. But the fart app called iFart was the number one seller in the App Store for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And it sold for $1.
Okay.
And it got $99,530 in gross sales for the first 2 weeks.
What?
Yeah. And there's 100,000 copies. That's about 100,000 copies.
Okay. Jeez, man.
So there's like 40,000 copies sold around Christmas time.
Okay.
So fart apps are really serious.
They
deals.
Are. Jeez.
I have a good reason for following that space.
I have an engineer friend of mine who wanted to learn Objective-C just so he could build some silly applications for the iPhone, because he claims that's like people are becoming millionaires by writing these applications.
Except, unless...
Really cheap, shitty...
Yeah, but the trouble is there's maybe 25,000 of those applications out there now, so... You get lost. You really have to have something, some angle of really good marketing or something.
Yeah.
Or it'll get lost. So
that's probably true.
It's not that easy.
Or just discover some kind of a niche or create like throw up apps or something that.
Yeah. Those are around. Let's start with,
I know.
Free Ghirardelli.
Wow. Ghirardelli.
Dark chocolate.
Dark chocolate. Yeah. You like that?
I do.
I don't. I don't like dark chocolate.
But for the. What?
Sorry.
What you're eating? What you're eating?
No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Sorry. So I always like to have besides the regular app of the week, I always like to have like a fart app of the week. So I chose this week just because of the name, Fartoven. It's a keyboard where you, this I've done before, keyboards that play fart noises a lot. The music is really done in fart noises.
Okay.
Have been around for a while, but I just like the name Fartoven.
Nice.
So I'm choosing that one. It'll record and playback and, you play sample songs and stuff like that. And farts.
Okay.
So, anyway. I guess I'm... Are you ready for a real serious iPhone?
Yeah.
Now, with your stupid BlackBerry, you're going to still do iPhone apps? Or what are we doing?
Yeah, no.
You still will?
Yeah. I'm going to start reviewing the BlackBerry App Store.
It's
going to be available.
They'll have five apps.
I'm going to go ahead and start reviewing some of them. Although the thing that I'm discovering with Hanbango... is that the applications for the BlackBerry, although smaller, are more expensive than the App Store apps for
like
the iPhone.
$30 for a typical one?
Yeah. So it's going to be difficult for me in this time of financial crisis to be able to buy all these different apps.
Oh, you buy them?
Oh.
I doubt that you have to buy them.
Really? Anyway.
Yeah.
So I'll start to review them as well.
Okay.
Kind of branch out.
Actually, I want to talk about an iPhone app that won't run because I haven't upgraded to the very, because for jailbreak reasons, I haven't upgraded to the very latest 2.2.1 OS.
Okay.
And this requires it, so I haven't run it yet. But I think I figured out how it works. It's really interesting. It's a thing called Bump, and it's a way to transfer your phone directory and stuff from one iPhone to another. And It claims that all you do is you hold your full iPhone in your hand, your friend holds theirs in their hand, and you bump the two of them together, and then they'll ask you which names you want to transfer. That seems kind of odd. How could that possibly work, right?
Accelerometer?
So I figured it out. Apparently, it needs data. It needs to have your GPS working. So the clue seems to be that whenever the two apps bump each other, it sends into the server where you're located. So if the server sees two of them bump at exactly the same time that are in the same neighborhood by the GPS, I think it starts a file sharing session between those two. I think that's how it works. But it's pretty ingenious.
That is pretty
ingenious
interesting.
Idea, yeah.
That's
the only way I can think of that fits all the clues that it gives about how it works. Yeah.
Weird. Cool.
So I was thinking at first that you both had to be on the same Wi-Fi network.
Right.
I kind of figured out really early that the bumping had to be an accelerometer synchronization thing. But then it claims it needs GPS, so that's my clue that it,
weird.
It must be like that. Yeah. So do you want to do an iPhone app and I'll go find a...
No, I'm going to actually do iPhone apps. I actually have to do a pass because I don't have any iPhone apps. I've been focusing on my BlackBerry.
Look at your touch and choose something you like.
But I don't have anything new on my touch.
Really? Okay. I'm always trying out new ones. So, I'll do a couple.
Let's see.
I'm
pretty low on iPhone apps, but go ahead.
Okay. I showed Wes both of these all the way over here. One is called, what's the name of this stupid thing? TapTap Cards.
Okay.
TapTap Cards is something where you either open the camera and take a new picture, or you point it at the pictures that you have saved in your album, and you choose one, and then you type in legend, a message if you want that will get superimposed on the picture.
Okay.
Then you type in the message and someone's name and address, or look at your address book. And basically you transmit the picture and all this information to their server.
Okay.
And they mail a postcard to the person with your picture in the mail.
Nice.
So I showed Wes a sample one that I mailed to myself to see how it works. So that's kind of cool.
Okay. And it looks pretty good.
It's like $1.99 per card.
That's not...
It's just too expensive.
That's too much.
It's way too expensive, yeah.
Yeah.
Rather than that, it works pretty well.
Okay.
And then another one just is photo editing. There's a million apps in the App Store for editing your photos in different ways.
Okay.
So there's one called Color Splash.
Okay.
That I kind of like. Where it turns your whole picture into black and white, except where you want to add the color back. So you can expand it at any resolution so you can work with it. You kind of get a paintbrush thing, and you paintbrush where you want to be color. And where you want to be. If you extend too far and make a mistake, you can switch over to black and white mode and paint where you want the black and white to be to correct your color mistakes and stuff. So it's not really that hard. The idea is you take a picture that just emphasizes... Like there's one person in the picture you like, you make them color and have everyone else turn black and white.
Okay.
To emphasize your friend or whatever.
Okay.
It's not that hard to do.
Do you have any dessert tonight? We have cheesecake and chocolate cake available.
No. Okay.
We sure have a coffee.
Do you have decaf?
Yes.
Yeah, decaf. Yeah.
A cup of decaf. Will you be having cream and sugar with your decaf?
Yes, please. Yeah, please. All right. So I did a few of them yesterday just to play around with it. I showed you one.
It was pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I will post at least two applications.
Okay.
I need to spend some time looking at them.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and review them and post them up on the show notes. Although we don't talk about it here, I will go ahead and do that. No excuse. I've been just busy and...
Sure, you're just busy. Yeah.
I've just been busy.
What's more busy worthy than Slurpcast?
Java classes and keeping my head above water financially. Oh. Anyway.
That's more important than Slurpcast?
No.
Okay.
If I could make enough to survive, on Slurpcast,
right.
I would do that.
Our five listeners didn't need up to do
that.
Our five listeners are not enough.
Well, if we put up a subscribe button,
and Uncle Brucey listens.
If we put up a donate button that takes money out of everybody's account like monthly.
Right, your friend listens.
Sure,
she thinks it's funny.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So yeah, see.
Well, I have a couple of friends that listen.
Okay,
but
well, should I mention the I Control Cat? Is that worth it?
It's cute, but...
I'll post a link to this hardware thing. You can buy this remote control that looks like any other TV or VCR remote control.
Yeah.
But the buttons all have commands to give to your cat. You aim at your cat and push the buttons and watch your cat meow or stop making noise or stop clawing the furniture.
Yep.
You see the cat clawing the furniture, push the button saying stop clawing,
yeah,
and it stops. So I'll post a link to that. And then there's an iPhone app now that does the same thing. It just brings up a picture of a remote control with all your cat buttons and stuff.
That's cute.
Yeah. I actually paid for that.
Probably ten lines of code and Objective-C and a couple of nice nice images.
I paid for that.
That's about it.
I paid $2, I think. I know. But anyway, okay, I guess that's all.
Okay. Well, so to end the show, thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget, www.slurpcast.com is where you would go to listen to the show and also take...
And listen to the show first, then look at the items.
Yes. Don't look at the items.
Don't cheat.
And then just listen to the show, because many people just do that.
Yeah, that's cheating.
Yeah. So. Or just click the link at slurpcast.com to subscribe automatically to add the show to your iTunes.
Right, right.
That's how we're going to get a lot of activity, and we need that to promote what we're doing.
Yeah, so. Okay.
Yeah. And then communicate in the blog. Like, send messages back when we're wrong. Nobody ever does that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, should we review the restaurant?
Yeah, do you want to review the restaurant?
I wasn't that happy with it.
Okay.
The turkey was just kind of like pressed turkey loaf that was overcooked and stuff. It was really very boring.
Okay.
It really wasn't that happy at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, your quesadillas look better.
My quesadillas were kind of good.
Yeah.
The sides, the salsa was okay. I thought the salsa was pretty good in the beginning, but I could have done better.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway. Okay. All right, I should have gone with the burger.
Yeah, that may have been good. Yeah,
nice.
Okay.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening to the show. Okay.